This meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will come back to order. We still have Senate File 3157 on the agenda. Senator Dibble, I think you finished your presentation. You finished your amendments. Discussion from the committee. Questions from the committee. I have a feeling Senator Pratt may have some questions or something.
I don't think so. He should be down the
chart. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Not serving on transportation after the last 7 years, I do have just under the tab fee, Senator Dibble, do you mind kind of walking through what the proposal is and kind of the depreciation changes that you are doing on that and kind of give me a tutorial, if you don't mind?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Senator Dibble.
Senator Dreheim, I'm missing my little cheat sheet here that would help, so I'll rely on my owner friend here. But the short version is the tab fee proposal would be to increase the rate of the tax on the price of the vehicle. We didn't accept the governor's proposal, which would keep the rate the same, but tax 160% of the value of the vehicle. We would tax 100% of the value, not 160% of the value. So we would increase it by about 0.25 or so percent. And then, as you're probably familiar, the way tab fees work is in the subsequent year, you tax it on a lesser portion of the value of the vehicle. It goes down, a number of percentage points per year until the 10th year, where then you have the minimum amount that you pay, and you pay that on your tab fee from that point on for the life of the car. So we would, increase the rate of the tax and slow down the depreciation schedule a little bit, ending up at the end of that 10th year actually at a lower amount than someone would otherwise pay. It's important to also remember, however, Senator Dreheim, that no one would pay any more. So basically people who currently own a car are grandfathered. So this would be for prospective vehicle purchases. Ms. Boyd, do you have more detail?
Ms. Boyd? No, I don't have more detail. I would just clarify that last point that the same new tax and new depreciation schedule would be assessed against any car at the registration period, but a car that's previously registered in Minnesota would not pay more than they did in the previous year. So it would, a car that's previously registered would not shoot up or increase at all under this proposal.
Chair.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you both for that explanation. So my understanding is that my existing car, I'm grandfathered in, unless I would trade it in or buy a new car. But on the value, the 160% of value, can we just go over how that is set? Is that like a Kelley Blue Book type number? And then what happens with the older vehicles that aren't in such a database?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
So it's 100% of value, not 160. We rejected the 160 proposal from the governor. So it'd be 100% of the manufactured, MSRP, the manufacturer's sale
recommended price.
So whatever the MSRP stands for. That's how the amount is determined, which is a reform actually led by Senator Kiffmeyer a few years ago, because that, how you figure out the price of a car was kind of all over the map and very, very complicated. So we simplified that a number of years ago. And to your second question, Boyd, do you recall how we deal with other? We have exceptions for certain kinds of cars.
Yeah. with the retail price, there's steps that how they can calculate it.
So, yeah, if the retail price label is not available using the actual sales price of the vehicle, if the registrar is unable to ascertain the manufacturer's suggested retail price, yeah, the MSRP, in the foregoing manner, the registrar may use any other available source or method.
So, Chair, if I could. So I bought a new vehicle 28 months ago, and it is worth 50% of what I paid. I just checked with the dealer. So I would be 3 years old, I think, under your chart, and I would pay 90% of new value. Is that my interpretation correct? Even though the dealer values it at 50% of what I paid, for this purpose, for the tab fees, it would be at the 90%?
Correct.
Okay. I just want to understand it. Yeah, thank you, so, Mr. Senator.
Well, Mr. Chair, under current law, it would be ascertained at 80% of value. So under current law, the reduction is a straight line, 10% every year for 10 years until year 11 is 0%, then you pay the minimum. Under the proposed, you would just slow it down in the next year, and then it would start that 10% decline until you get to the ninth year, and then it would jump of 15% to 25%, then 10%, you'd end up at a lower rate. So,
thank you.
And Senator Dibble, on that point, you and the governor and everyone seem to be taking the 11th year and further and bringing it lower. What was the rationale for that? Just that I'm just curious.
There's one practical reason, and then also, it's just kind of the way we netted it out in terms of what we're trying to raise for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. It's important to remember this is constitutionally dedicated, so it goes into the HUTDF and then flows out to the Trunk Highway Fund. I won't get into all the particular details, but 62% to the Trunk Highway Fund, 29% to CASA, 9% to MSA. There's the 5% set aside that we talked about earlier that goes to turnbacks and things like that. But also remember that we also have the 750 surcharge that's also split out between town roads, small cities, and larger cities. That's outside of this piece.
Further questions about the bill? Senator Pratt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Senator Dibble, I just had a quick question. You increased the cost of a driver's license, and it seemed like you followed pretty closely to the King Report, grouping real ID versus legacy licenses. And if I recall, in transportation last year, we had a discussion about the idea that when real ID was passed, we wanted to make sure that real ID and the legacy license were the same cost, so that there was no financial barrier to someone going through the process of obtaining a real ID, being able to enter federal buildings, being able to board an airplane. Can you help me understand what your thoughts were on going back to the original recommendation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pratt, I will defer somewhat to Senator Jasinski, who kind of led this part of the section. But I can say that, the King Report conversations with the deputy registrars and others, they do point out that there is quite a bit more effort that goes into, issuing real IDs in terms of, and anyone who has a real ID or the other kind of license that I have, the enhanced driver's license. I actually have that even more elaborate in terms of the number of documents you need to produce, and then the deputy registrar just has to spend that much more time looking at the documents, validating them, et cetera. And so I think it was an attempt to respond to a lot of the issues that the deputy registrars and driver's license agents brought us around the amount of time that they're spending, particularly vis-a-vis the new transaction system that is working very successfully, but is actually not driving a lot of cost savings into the system, because a lot of the transaction is being driven out to the front window rather than being sent to the back office of the state of Minnesota.
Further discussion. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I recall as we talked about the King report last year, there was a discussion that with the implementation of the new licensing system, it seemed like a lot of the work that was done on the backside of the transaction was being moved to the front, which was causing the deputy registrar expense both for our counties as well as our independent deputy registrars. But I'm not seeing any shift in funding from the back office to help fund those operations. And what I'm hearing, at least from Scott County, is they feel like those cost increases would warrant more like a $20 subsidy versus a $16 subsidy or an $11 subsidy. And I'm curious, is there any additional movements in how we allocate state funds, not to put that onto our drivers, but to at least recognize where the work has changed as we've implemented the new system?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt. I'd be interested in Scott County's analysis of the bill as it is, because particularly the public deputy registrars as well as the private deputy registrars, I think, have a good case to make that we still have work to do to make up for past losses, which is reflected part of the one-time target. $20 million, $10 million, and $10 million is used to distribute to the deputy registrars across the state to make up for a lot of the losses that they've suffered in the past that we just simply haven't made up for, particularly as related to the transition period. Mm-hmm. But that is the rationale for some of the credentialing fee increases, and some of the filing fee increases around driver's licenses and different types of driver's license, as well as the surcharge that's allowed for online transactions, vehicle transactions. Those dollars would be distributed to the full service providers. And then for in-person transactions, there's a 50-cent surcharge that's allowed, again, retained by the deputy registrars. And so we are attempting to get more resources into the hands of the deputy registrars for that exact purpose. I'm of course focused on the privates, because they have to operate a business and pay employees and make sure they're paying for all the overhead. The counties are subsidizing their deputy registrar services with property taxes, and some of them are just ready to close those offices because they're not willing to provide that local property tax subsidy for a state service. So I'm very interested in that analysis to see how we can make the bill better in that regard.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I'd be happy to talk to you offline about it.
Senator Pratt, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question, Senator Dibble, and I'm quite honestly trying to find the reference I had this morning on this issue. I guess after 12 hours of floor session, I've lost my piece here, but there was a change to the corridor of commerce distribution. You and I talked briefly about this on the floor, where it seems like, and I think you mentioned Senator Jasinski was a part of that conversation as well, where we're looking to take about 50% to greater Minnesota, 50% to the metro, and then within the metro allocation, 45% of that 50% would go to the suburban ring counties with 55% going to the Hennepin and Ramsey County. And I just want to I want to understand that, because I think that's a good change as we move forward, because as we look at corridors of commerce just in 17 and 18, and I think the distribution holds pretty consistently over the history of the program, only about a 0.5% of the funding has gone to the suburban county. So greater, you know, of corridors of commerce, greater Minnesota has received about 59%. Most of the rest has gone to Hennepin and Ramsey, with the suburban ring counties getting approximately 0.5%. And as we see more and more of our employers and growth in the suburbs, and, you know, I'm particularly sensitive to this because Scott County is the fastest growing county in the state. You know, followed by Carver County, which is also attracting a lot of employers relocating out there. Am I reading that right? That we would now expect that distribution for the ring counties to go from the 0.5% that it's been in the past to at least an expectation that we'd be at 22-23%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, you're reading that exactly right. As I understand, you know, there's a different approach that's being led by Representative Torkelson on the other side. What you describe is what I'm committed to as well, to make sure that, because that was actually a surprise to me. I didn't know that, within the corridors of commerce, well, there's always the big conversation around how much should go to Metro, how much should go to Greater Minnesota. That's one debate, discussion, struggle we have around corridors. And then the second one is, of course, within the Metro. Well, then there's a big conversation about what is Metro and what's not Metro. But then within the Metro, making sure that we have some fair allocation of resources for those projects. Absolutely, yes.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, not really a question, more of a comment. Even though Senator Dreheim doesn't like to admit that he is a suburban senator with a portion of Scott County, I would say that I think this is a more fair way of approaching it than what the House is looking at right now. You know, if I were to think about, you know, the House version, basically, as I understand it, drawing a radius from a point, there are parts in the county that Senator Dreheim and I share where those cities, those communities furthest out would be just outside the line. And I think we need to take a more holistic approach. So I appreciate your approach to that and working with Senator Jasinski on what I think is a more fair and equitable distribution. So, I also noticed not a lot of money, but some attention to railway safety, and certainly railway safety has been in the news. Wondering if you had it. You didn't really talk about it much. Wondering if you had any additional thoughts on railway safety.
Thank you. Despite the coincidence of timing, we actually had already introduced and scheduled a hearing for the Senator Kupek bill, and then kind of coincidentally overnight, there was the big accident in western Minnesota, so that just kind of put a punctuation mark on the urgency and the need for that particular conversation. And some of those, the elements of the public safety initiative, and, you know, Mr. Greenfield, who actually worked really hard with Senator Kupik in writing the bill, and interestingly, it was reviving a lot of the work that our majority leader had begun a number of years ago, which was then building on, actually, interestingly, work that I had started with my counterpart in the House a couple years prior. Has to do mostly with issues around more meaningful relationship with and conversation and communication, and also some activities with local responders as well as state emergency managers, so that there's clearer lines of communications, clearer standards of response and timely response, opportunities to do exercises and you know, test out procedures and make sure that that all the systems are aligned and everyone knows what they're going to do and what the protocols and procedures are, some of the standards around accident site management and that sort of thing. Mr. Greenfield, any highlights that I'm forgetting?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, no, I think Senator Dibble captured the intent of the language behind 3187. I will say that some of the intentions behind the set time schedules for response were out of the response to Pennsylvania's authorities in East Palestine and how the railroad handled the initial response to that confirmed discharge of obviously very hazardous substances. So that was kind of the intention behind the tabletop exercises, was to formalize a timeline in place that all parties would understand the responsibilities should an incident occur. And so that's kind of the responsibilities that are kind of throughout Article 8, Sections 4 through 9, and then again later on Section, let's see here. 44 of the bill and Section 45 of the bill are also the railroad safety. So kind of sprinkled throughout Article 8.
Further discussion, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think I'll just, you know, it's getting late. I'll just kind of close this up here real quick. I think there's a lot of good things in the transportation bill. I think Senator Dreheim pointed out some of the things that our side of the aisle is gonna have some problems with, and they won't come as a surprise. We're setting on a record surplus, and we are increasing a metro-wide sales tax. We are increasing tab fees and fees across the board at a significant amount, and putting additional, you know, as Minnesotans have overpaid a variety of taxes to help create this surplus, we continue to add more upon them. The other thing I would say, Mr. Chair, is surprised to see the Blue Line extension being started in this, as well as the Northern Lights Express. I think we need to take a real look, a hard look again at what has become the most expensive public works projects, I think, in state history on the Southwest Light Rail. When I first got elected to the Senate, I was assigned to Senator Dibble's Transportation Committee, and this was going to be a $1.2 billion project that I think was supposed to start, open up and start working in 2017 or 18. And here we are in 2023, and it's twice the cost that we thought it was going to be, and we're well past 2017 or 18 as far as getting this thing started, and there's still funding gaps in that project. And when I look at this, it seems to me that it would be more appropriate for Northern Lights and Blue Line, if we were to move forward with them, for those to be included in a capital investment project rather than the transportation project, when we have so many roads and bridges and operating expenses. As we talked about, are the people who are processing driver's licenses are taking on more of the task up front. It's taking more manpower to process those applications, and yet we're still, and I'll have this conversation with Senator Dibble on the Scott County analysis, but there's still more to do in making sure that we keep these deputy registrars both at the county level providing a great service, but recognizing the importance of our local deputy registrars in being accessible to our communities. and taking some of the pressure off because they can be open on hours that others wouldn't. But while there's a lot of goodness, Bill, I think the tax increases, the fee increases, are really more than what Minnesota families can afford. And I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Further discussion? If not, Senator Murphy, Senator Friends.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, just briefly, thank you for bringing the bill forward. You know I have concerns about the revenue, but I'm positive that you're the right person to put whatever money it is to good use for transportation. I'm ready to vote yes on this bill to get it out of finance, and I look forward to the discussions I know we're going to have on all the aspects of the bill. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate House file. House file, whatever. House File 2887, as amended, be recommended to pass on that.
That is my motion, Mr. Chair. This is long overdue, and I'm happy to move it and support it.
Is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, we have one. Thank you, Senator Dibble,
and thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
For helping with this, Ms. Boyd, Mr. Greenfield. We are going to be meeting at 8:30 tomorrow morning. We're going to try and get the cannabis bill done before session tomorrow so we don't have to come back tomorrow night. And I don't know how long to project that'll take, but we'll try for that. So 8:30. I know you were pleased it was not 7:30. With that, this meeting's adjourned.